wills, trusts, and estate planning, litigation, accidents, and personal injury, constitutional law, Medicaid planning, elder care, and health law, criminal defense, not-for-profit and entity formation, commercial financing. O'Connell and Aronowitz, attorneys at law, 518-462-5601. 518-462-5601. OALaw.com. Pika Moose Restaurant on State Route 28 in Big Indian, with farm-to-table cuisine Thursday through Monday. Indoor dining from 4 to 9 p.m. and outdoor dining on the moonlit deck. Take out till 10. PikaMoose.com or 845-254-6500. 845-254-6500. The Slighter Agency on Main Street in Margaretville, a neighborhood independent insurance agency, educating consumers about the importance of flood insurance, even for those who don't live in a flood hazard zone, and about coverage options. Open Monday through Friday, 8:30 till 5. More information at 845-586-2641 or slideragency.com. The Fierce Grizzly Grocery and Cafe in Roxbury. Quality meats, fresh fish, and groceries. All at the Fierce Grizzly, purveyors of fine foods on the corner of Main Street and Vega Mountain Road in Roxbury, New York.
Hi, this is John Bernhard, host of Tip Off, the most unique sports radio show in the Catskills. Friday mornings from 9 to 10, right here on WIOX Roxbury Community Radio, live and local at 91.3 FM, MTC Cable Channel 20, and WIOXRadio.org.
Okay, you are listening to WIOX Community Radio, live and local in the Catskill Mountains at 91.3 FM and MTC Cable Channel 20, and at 107.5 FM on the campus of SUNY Delhi on smart devices through the Radio FM app, and everywhere at WIOXRadio.org, where it's easy to donate. This is From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Talk about a different forest-related topic with Ryan and John. John, how's it going?
Things are good, Ryan. How are you?
I'm good, I wanted to ask you about Maine.
Yeah, spent a week in Maine last week. That's why I wasn't on the show last week. And had a lot of fun. I spent a week in the woods up there.
So, differences?
Managed.
Between here and the Catskills?
An old forest there would be some hemlock and sugar maple that's exceeding 12 inches in diameter.
Really?
Oh, it's very young. They cut it hard, cut it heavy, cut it often.
Who's they?
There's different land trusts that own land, but Wagner Paper Companies owns a lot of land up in that area that we were at. I'm sure there's others as well, but that's what I noticed.
Species.
Beech, birch, maple, hemlock, mostly red maple, some sugar maple, the occasional red oak, very rare, but every now and then saw one.
And you guys were up there chasing the almighty moose, huh?
Yeah, my father had a moose tag, and it's rare to draw one. It's a lottery system, so we all went up to help him and did not come home with a moose, but so I saw four moose. And...
Who's counting, right?
Who's counting? Some more than him.
John was counting. I was. You know, I saw four moose.
I was bird hunting, grouse hunting, which is something that's hard to do around here in the Catskill Mountains. You find them every now and then, but there it's hard to walk more than 100 yards without flushing one of those things up.
Our small game is pretty non-existent.
Yeah, and we found snowshoe hare. We found spruce grouse, which is a species you cannot hunt, but a species that we don't have here in the Catskill Mountains.
Yeah.
What's the difference?
What's the difference? People call it rough grouse the forest chicken. I would say spruce grouse is the forest chicken. They definitely resemble the body shape of a chicken. They're much more plump, round, smaller in size than a rough grouse. Dark body, and they have a very appealing presentation to their tail fan. A lot of light feathers on dark feathers. A red eye stripe, a red crown on top of them. There was a male strutting in the road in front of the female, so we got to see that. But got a lot of pictures of that.
That's cool.
Yeah, no, it was neat.
Never seen one myself.
I would say the deer, people say there's no deer up there. I'd say there's just as many deer as the high peaks of the Catskill region.
Yeah.
So similar to any other mountainous, anywhere that gets winter.
That's almost no deer, though.
Yeah, but enough where when you go for walks all day, you get into deer. You find them.
You find them, yeah.
It's not rare.
No, I know there's deer up in the mountains, but it's the lowest you can have, basically, you know, from what the data indicates, 4 to 8. But there's some big ones we know of, right, that you know of. You're hunting them.
I keep an eye on them. They're around.
They're around. So, they're cool animals.
Maine is cool, though. I mean, where we were, so the south, when you go up I-95 there, and you're following the coast, you go through Portland, you're heading north, then you turn north head towards Bangor and that direction. But when you're down that far south in Maine, it's just the same as the rest of New England, you know, an extension off of eastern Massachusetts, northeastern Massachusetts. And so that doesn't really change until you get about halfway through Maine. Then it really, it's like a light switch goes off, and the cutting gets pretty heavy. And
kind of like going from Saratoga Springs to Saranac Lake.
Right, right.
You know, from Northern Hardwood to Boreal, I would imagine. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
What wasn't Northern Hardwood was Boreal. You get into spruce, spruce fir, a lot of balsam fir.
Michigan's like that, right? I mean, same thing. Lower Michigan, lower peninsula, and then the upper peninsula there, which is, I don't know why, is part of Michigan, but someone from Michigan could tell me why. It's not part of Wisconsin. Who knows why?
Yep.
You ever look at a map? Makes no sense. But anyway, that third voice is Mr. Mead, Mr. Gary Mead from Gary Mead Gallery. Talk about a different Catskills tree. However, tonight we're going to be talking about trees that bear nuts.
Nuts and seeds, yeah.
Nuts and seeds.
Yep.
How you doing, Gary?
I'm doing well. How are you doing, man?
All right. What have you been up to?
Trying to put a garage up and...
You're just ecstatically happy about it.
Oh, no, I'm very... I was depressed for about 2 weeks ago for about 5 minutes, and I said, well, Christ, I got to do this on my own. It's what I have to do, so whatever.
Yeah.
And, you know, before snow flies, I expected by now to have a building up, but the way the summer went, being kicked to the curb all summer, I've got my footing, and that's all I got so far, and hopefully next week I'll have my frost wall up and we can put the drainage in, cover the hole, and wait for spring to build.
It's hard finding people around here to do a lot of things.
Yeah, it is. And but you know, like I said, when I first found out a few weeks ago that the cement guys weren't going to help me out, I was depressed for about 5 minutes, and I said, well, depression never helped anybody, so I'm not going there.
Right.
So I'm just building my own forms and doing it myself, and it's a learning experience. I've never done this kind of work before, and it's, you know, of course it's going to take me a lot. You know, something they could do in 2 or 3 days is going to take me 2 or 3 weeks, but, you know, whatever. I had to you know, stop everything else I was doing. And
you should write a book on depression management, Gary, called Just Stop.
Just stop it.
Just don't do that. Move on.
Yeah.
Short book. Make millions.
Yeah.
It's a good one.
I'm not about making millions, but
well, you know,
I like to make thousands.
Whatever.
Just to pay the bills, but anyway, I wouldn't turn it down if it come my way.
That's right.
But you know, before when we were off the air, I was, you know, when I first started my company 46 years ago now, it was Fruitful Furnishings. And we sat around one night in 1978, and we're talking about, you know, I just started my new company and trying to think of a name for it. And, you know, we're sitting around partying one night, and, you know, I come up with the idea. I said, you know, every tree bears fruit. So this kid that was in college I was hanging out with said, every tree bears fruit. Let's think about this. And we come up with the company name Fruitful Furnishings. And a lot of people, you know, in the past, you know, up through the times, had asked me why that name. I said, well, every tree bears fruit.
1978?
That was 1978.
Damn, Gary.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, that was a few years back. Anyway, and, you know, when I, you know, dissolve Fruitful Furnishings. Now I'm running under Gary Mead Gallery LLC because I'm sole proprietor and, you know, I have no employees anymore, which is, that was a lot of strain for years having. Well, it wasn't the old school guys that were the problem. It was the new age group coming in. It was tough. They were tough. The last 3 years of my company, it was a struggle, to say the least, to get these. I mean, the last year my company was in business, I had 3 full-timers, and they had 5 40-hour weeks in a year between the 3 of them.
Jesus.
And a company can't run like that. So anyway, that's why I just gave up. I said, you know what? You train, and the first 6 or 8 months, they're awesome. And then once they get their foot in the door, they kick back, and, oh, you know, and every little toe cramp or ass ache. Oh, my God. It's just got to be unbelievable. I could write a book on
Chapter 2.
On
you
excuses.
Need to stop that.
Yeah.
You need to move on.
You do.
Oh, your toe hurts?
No.
All right. Refer back to Chapter 1.
Yeah. Anyway, so we're talking about nuts and seeds, and they actually are the fruit. These keep our mountains growing, and because you don't realize how important a seed is. I was listening to, I think it was an IOX radio show about seeds. I don't know, just in the truck one day, and I was heading somewhere, and they were talking about seeds and how their great-great-grandparents brought seeds from all these other countries and introduced them into our world over here. And whenever anybody left a country, they would leave everything there except they would bring seeds, because that is a lifeline. A seed is a lifeline to not only your life, but the plant's life. And, you know, by integrating them into the soil, and, you know, like, you know, our maples, they seed out, and our cherries, and they reseed themselves, and, you know, new trees. And but, excuse me, the thing about nature is it provides, to get one tree to grow, I'll bet a million seeds perish and one survives.
Yeah, I've heard that too.
That's the abundance of the you know, nature's way of providing. You know, if one survives out of a million, we're still going to have a great forest, because there's a million seeds on one tree. I don't know, I never counted, but there's a lot. And a maple tree that is seeded out, and a nut tree that's the nuts, maybe not quite so many, but they're, you know, like the walnuts, they're much bigger in size, and you know, if they had as many nuts on them as the maple trees, the branches would break.
Yeah, some do.
And some do, and especially this year.
Oh, my God.
We had an abundance year in flowers and seeds. And I mean, you can go out, and right now is a perfect time to go out and harvest nuts and seeds. And you know, if you want to plant a tree, you know, I'm going around getting them all and let's bring them up to New Kingston and 5 gallon buckets of them. And I'm just, you know, on my, I have 30 acres up there and I just taking 5 gallon buckets, bringing them up there and I'm dumping them. I'm letting the squirrels plant them for me. And when they start, because that's what happened in Arkville. I must have 12 to 15 walnut trees around my house from a soccer game I went to in Ellenville like 8 or 9 years ago. And at halftime, I saw this walnut over there, a bunch of walnuts, and I climbed the fence and everybody pointing and peeking and looking. I'm
you get arrested, Gary.
I'm fine. Well, I didn't. But
didn't take much anymore.
No, so I had some bags in the car, and I filled them up, and I brought them home, and some of them I ate, and some were sitting on the porch, and I come out on the porch, and the squirrels would be running off with them, and they planted them all around my house. So, and they seem to grow good. I got one. Well, you've seen the one by my door.
Yeah, it's nuts.
I cut that back to a twig every year, and it gets, it's probably 15 feet wide now. It's amazing how big that thing gets,
mm-hmm.
just in one season. But I can't have a big tree growing by my house, so I'm...
Just keep pruning it back to those knuckles. That'd be pollarding, true pollarding. If you go back to the same spot every year, you'll start to create knuckles.
Right. That's what they've started to do.
I can see, yeah, the knuckles are starting to develop, but yeah. You got to keep going back to the same spot.
Oh, I will, yeah. Yeah, Rob Reynolds, he's a arborist, and he went to Clemson, North Carolina. He got his master's in horticulture, and, you know, he cuts trees and that. But he told me when when the tree was first growing there, I said, geez, I don't know what to do with this. I don't think I can uproot it and transplant. He said, just prune it back. Cut it right back every year the same. And, yeah. You know, this spring it was a twig with all these little, well, they're starting to form knuckles now coming off it.
Yeah.
And it's reached all the way over to my roof again.
Yeah, pollarding's very rare. The only place I can think of that I've seen it truly done correctly is right outside High Falls. There's a tree.
There's one in Middleburg.
I'm sure there is, but I just haven't seen it. But, yeah, I can think of right off of County Road 1, right on the side of the road. It's truly pollarded. It's pretty neat.
So what was the purpose of that?
Keep them small. They use the little twigs for kindling and stuff, I guess. I don't know.
Well, I'm doing it to keep my tree from getting out, because you don't want a huge walnut.
No.
10 feet from your house.
Yeah.
It's just not going to work. But I didn't want to kill it. And now I can, as long as I keep it small, I'm not threatened by it. And, you know, the roots, there's nothing there. The roots are going to bother. It did. And remember when we studied walnut, they put they secrete, it's like the goldenrods. They secrete something into the soil so nothing else will germinate there. And I had a huge quince bush where this tree grew. And it took 8 years, but it took that quince bush right down. I never liked the damn thing anyway. My ex-wife planted it there, and I just tolerated it. But boy, that walnut took her down, took her out.
Well, that chemical's called juglone.
Juglone?
Yeah.
Yeah. So is that in the nut?
It's a natural herbicide.
It's in, yeah, it's in the husks and the hull. It's also in the root system, as far as I know.
Well, I knew it's in the root system, right? But I figured it must be carried on through the seed or the nut.
I think it's in the roots, but I don't remember. I'm pretty sure it's in the roots.
I think it's in the hull, too, so when the nut gets planted, it has a chance to grow.
Is that right?
I think I'm going back to memory. I don't know. I mean, I must have read that somewhere.
Yeah. Well, those roots go, you know, a few times past the drip line, so pretty much takes up the whole backyard almost.
Yeah.
So that's pretty neat.
Yeah.
They're pretty weedy. Once they get going, they're pretty weedy, black walnut. I mean, they really want to grow.
Yeah, no, that's what I've had people, you know, they plant them, rows of them, and, you know, 10, 12 years later, they're calling me and the branches are broke off and whatnot. But my advice to anybody putting a black walnut tree in, prune it heavy the first 3 years and then let it go.
Or,
because what they do is they grow so fast, like a peach tree. They grow so fast, and they have these long, springly limbs, and they become very susceptible to wind damage, and it'll break them.
Yeah.
I mean, it's basically when they break, it's a self-pruning. But they're probably breaking where you really don't want them to break.
I wonder if they're just more susceptible in colder areas to breaking, too.
That, too. Once
I don't see them breaking as much where I grew up in the Walk Hill Valley.
Once the frost gets in.
But once I moved up here, I remember one right on Hall Road in Margaretville snapped in half. And I was like, that's something.
I think we might have more intense wind here, too. Because that's kind of sheltered by too high.
It's windy all over the place.
But we get, the other day when the wind took down a big basswood tree, my sister-in-law called me up on Sunday morning and said, "Gee, I hate to bother you. Is Mitch around?" I said, "No, he's not around. What you got?" She said, "Well, we had a big tree blew down across the driveway." And I went up, and it was this huge basswood. And luckily, I had the loader up off the property just 2 miles away.
Yeah.
But that had, the basswood had these little, are they edible? I know
I
the
believe
flowers
they are. Yeah.
Because this had a bunch of little white, they look like cherry seeds.
We talked about in the past, it is edible from what I remember, but it doesn't taste like much of anything.
But the flowers are wonderful.
Yeah, I've never had them. You've had them?
Yeah, the flowers are absolutely delightful.
What about black walnuts? Have you processed those and eaten them?
The walnuts, yeah. They're a bear to get the nut out.
That's the problem, you know?
Hit them with a hammer, and you end up, it takes so long to get them out of those little cavities.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because I remember the walnuts that we had, you know, that come in, you get them in the store around the holidays, and you know, they're smooth-shelled, and you crack them, and that's a different kind of a walnut.
The European walnut.
The European, yeah. So they grow them for the nut, really. But anyway, the ones up here, I mean, they're so hard, and you got to wear gloves. Well, you don't have to, but your hands are going to be blue or black when you get done.
Yeah.
Because... Mm-hmm. They actually take the they use that for different dyes.
Oh yeah,
and
tan leather with it and everything.
They tan
or dye leather.
Yeah.
Ever see a squirrel eating black walnut? They'll have a black goatee.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
But they are hard to get in. And
how do they taste though?
They taste awesome. You know, they're,
I feel like I haven't had one so long I don't remember. I go after shag barks.
Well, they have that woody walnut taste. Kind of, and the hickory's a little smoother than a walnut, in my opinion. But you know, I got a bag of hickory nuts one year too, and I cracked them open.
Let's talk about hickory next. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to From the Forest. Tonight's topic is trees that bear fruit, with Gary Mead.
Well, it's knowing that your door is always open and your path is free to walk. That makes me tend to leave my sleeping bag rolled up, stashed behind your couch. And it's knowing I'm not shackled by forgotten words and bonds and the ink stains that have dried upon some lines. That keeps you in the back roads by the rivers of my memory and keeps you ever gentle on my mind. It's not clinging to the rocks and ivy planted on their columns now that bind me, or something that somebody said because they thought we fit together walking. It's just knowing that the world will not be cursing nor forgiven when I walk along some railroad track and find that you're moving on the back roads by the rivers of my memory, and for hours you're just gentle on my mind. Though the wheat fields and the coal mines and the junkyards, the highways come between us, and some other woman's crying to her mother 'cause she turned and I was gone. I still might run in silence, tears of joy might stain my face, and the summer sun might burn me till I'm blind. But not to where I cannot see you walking on the back roads by the rivers flowing gentle on my mind. I dip my cup of soup from some gurgling, crackling cauldron in some train yard. My beard a roughening coal pile and a dirty hat pulled low across my face. Through cupped hands round a tin can, I pretend to hold you to my breast and find that you're waving from the back roads by the rivers of my memory, ever smiling, ever gentle on my mind.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. That was Johnny Cash singing Gentle on My Mind, Glen Campbell song. So we're talking about Trees That Bear Fruit with Gary Mead, and I want to talk about Shagbark Hickory. To me, that's my favorite because it's not as hard to process as black walnut, and they taste like pecan. And you just got to find a shagbark hickory tree in the middle of a field, because it has lots of sunlight, and the squirrels don't go there as much because the hawks can see them. So, and even better than a field is a road. You know, maybe a road people don't travel too much, like a town road or something. Mm-hmm. Because then the hickory nuts fall out of the tree, they break out of the husk, and they get a little fried in the sunlight on the pavement, and that dries them out a little more.
Makes them easier to press to get inside.
When
them.
You crack the nut, it's more likely to come out of the the nut meat.
So if I took hickory nuts, put them in my kiln at like 130 degrees for 2 or 3 days, they'll kind of open up themselves, you think?
Well, so the husk, they don't, if they're ripe, the husk just comes off of the nut.
Right, but
and then you crack that.
Right.
But if you could heat it up a little bit in the kiln, I can't see that being bad for them. Be good. I actually put them in the oven just to dry them out a little bit because they're, you know, moist from the ground and everything.
When they're meaty, they're harder to, I found, to get. Because the last batch I had, I did put in the oven to dry them out, because when you crack them, you know, there was like a juice kind of coming out of the hull. And you want it to crack. You don't want it to. Because it's like a wet piece of wood. You can bend it. When it's dry, it snaps.
So the secret is, Gary, is to crack them and then put them in boiling water. And then most of the nut meats will rise to the top out of the shells. Instead of picking them out with a nut pick or something, it takes forever.
And the shells float?
They don't float as much. So the nut meat comes to the top, and you just scoop them out, and then you roast them in the oven.
Mm-hmm.
Now you have dried nuts.
And then you make your butter from that?
Yeah. And add a little maple syrup to make it a little more viscous.
And how do you whip it into butter?
I have a high-speed blender.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
like a bullet would do the same thing.
Probably.
Anything that would chop it up.
Yeah, I mean, a Vitamix is what I use. That thing will almost boil water. That's how you clean them, actually. They go really fast. If you just put water in them and put it on high, it almost boils water.
Yeah.
Wow.
From the blade spinning.
Well, my bullet does too, because if I leave stuff in there too long, and I go to, I get sidetracked, and I go over and I grab the thing to take it out of the canister to take the top off, and it gets so hot that it forms a vacuum, and it's hard to get the top off.
Yeah, so I guess it is pretty high.
It heats up, and then when it starts cooling down, it becomes like a canned goods.
Yeah.
And, so I'm always careful of that. But anyway, it heats up, and so just maple syrup and nuts, and that's your...
That was it. It's gone. You know, I ate it all. I had a little salt, but it's really dark, rich, dark color.
Yeah. The kids get any?
Nah, you know what? The kids aren't going to like it because it has a smoky kind of taste that I don't think they like that much.
Well, have you tried giving them some?
They ate a little bit. They weren't ecstatic.
Yeah.
Me, I loved it. I mean, I ate it all.
Not like the venison, right?
The venison, they love that.
Last year, yeah. And I didn't even get any of the inner loin this year.
Nah, it's freaking... all the steak is gone, so I do need to shoot a deer, but I don't know. These kids are weird. They turn down hamburgers, hot dogs, and nuggets over steak. You know, most kids the opposite, you know.
Yeah.
But so the hickory nut is definitely worth it. Then there's bitternut hickory, which I think is a better growing tree in the Catskills. It grows taller, straighter, but as its name, it lives up to its name. It is bitternut. It looks like an ash tree.
It does.
With smooth, I like the name smooth bark hickory better than bitternut or pignut hickory.
Pignut, they call it. Yeah.
Those are actually two different trees. There's a pignut that looks like a shag bark that looks like it wants the shag but it doesn't the bark. That would be a pignut.
Mm-hmm.
Around here, it's mostly bitternut hickory or smooth bark.
Yeah, they look just like ash. When I moved to the mill, I thought, you know, that perennial that I call the tree garden that I have. I don't know. 12 different varieties of trees in this one little area.
Yeah.
You know, most of them are the hickory. And when I first moved there, I thought they were ash trees. And, you know, one matured, you know, a couple of years after I was there, and I saw hickory nuts on the ground, and I started looking closer. I said, holy smoke, these are all hickory. And there's a vein of them that goes right up the mountain, right there on the south side.
Oh, I bet. But when you boil that nut meat, it creates a broth that you could use. I mean, it's full of nutrients.
This is with the hickories,
shag bark. That's where it gets its name from, I guess. When I researched it, it was called palka hickora or whatever. And
You boil it in?
Yeah, it's full. They would use it to feed their kids, I guess, when they didn't have milk.
I would use it for a soup base.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. Stock.
How's the nuts just eating them?
They're great. I mean, they taste like pecan. Hmm. You know?
Yeah, I've never had
them. And they taste better when they're roasted, when they're green. When they're green, they're, I don't know, they don't have the... Roasting them seems to bring the flavor right out.
It's like peanuts, right? I mean, they roast peanuts, too.
Yeah, and if you eat raw peanuts... They're kind of bland, and they're white. But once they're roasted, boy, the flavor comes right out.
Yeah, all right. So, all right, what's another one you got? What have you ever picked white walnuts? You have, haven't you?
Yeah.
Butternut?
Yeah. Yeah, they're sticky on the outside, but, you know, the insides, it's a good meat. And it's they're not that hard to get into.
No?
It's that sticky stuff on the outside. Those you really have to pick off the ground. And if you leave them there, they worms and stuff get in them. And, you know, they bore right into the nut. So you got to pick them green and then put them up. I haven't picked them in a few years. But, you know, our butternuts don't get too many butternuts anymore. I think the only place, if I went to harvest them, that I would go was out by the river on Davis Flats there. There's a bunch of white walnuts and black walnuts out through the woods there by the river.
Yeah, there's a lot there.
There's quite a few. So,
more of an oblong nut as far as black walnuts, more round. Maybe that's why it's easier to crack, maybe.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah. And, you know, it's like a hazelnut, long and slender that way, but almost. I mean, next month, I think... Ryan wants to plant a hazelnut tree, and we haven't done hazelnuts, so...
Next year, yeah. I want to get into that.
Next month, we're going to talk about hazelnuts.
And mm-hmm.
That's a tree that we have not covered.
We have never covered hazelnuts.
This is my 13th year on the show, and we have never done hazelnut. I have never seen a native hazelnut, though, that I know of. I bet I have, but just not really known what it was. But anyway, I'm excited to learn about that.
So what about your other favorite tree there, Gary? Beech.
Beech nuts. They're amazing. I mean, they're sweet. They're really, and they open up themselves. And the ones that I saw up on the farm, see, for the beech has a bark disease. And we moved to the farm in 64 by, I think it was about 68, 67, 68. The beeches had the hulls with no nuts. And they did that for a few years. And they would form the hulls. They have a little flower in the spring. It forms whatever. But anyway, the flower is hardly noticeable. But they look like a little miniature porcupine. And they're kind of...
Like a miniature chestnut, really, in some ways. You know what I mean?
And they're oval-shaped.
Yeah.
Kind of. But they open up on the tree, and the nut falls out.
Yeah.
But for years, 3 or 4 years, they didn't bear nuts. And then we're out in the fall. I was walking around with Dad, and he goes, "Holy smoke, the beech nuts have nuts again."
I'd say it's our most abundant nut tree in the Catskills, is beech.
Yeah.
You know, it's not a big nut, but, you know, it's there nonetheless, and in the higher elevations, that's all there is a lot of times.
I have quite a few beech on my property in New Kingston, but it's, I mean, they got the bark disease. I think it's beautiful. When you see the real healthy beech nut, I mean, that really turns me on. But I don't, you know, I use the bark disease with, for, it looks like leopard skin. You clean it up and you saw it and, I mean, I make picture frames out of it, and I made, you know, hooks for a hall tree I made. And I love the beeches because the limbs, and they curve, and they come. And I mean, there's nothing straight about a beech tree. Maybe the bowl might be. But, you know, when I'm hunting, I'm always looking up into the trees, and I probably would see more deer if I were investigating trees. A big buck will walk by and go, "Oh, that idiot looking up in the tree."
There's that guy again. Look at it. He's looking up in the tree.
Yeah, good for me. I'll see you later. But anyway, but the shapes that they create and the limbs, and, you know, no other tree curves and bends like that.
Yeah.
Unless you prune it and make it do that. But the beech nuts, they're really tasty, but there may be three little seeds in each nut, and they're tiny. They're about the size of I'm trying to think of what it would be the size of. Smaller than a pumpkin seed, about maybe a... One pumpkin seed, one good-sized pumpkin seed, would be the equivalent of three of those nuts. But they are good. They're hard to harvest. When you see them on the tree, the hull falls off after the nut falls out, because they open up, send the fruit to the bottom, and so you got to kind of harvest them before now. Now they're all opened up, I would suppose, by now.
Yeah,
I noticed them a month ago.
Yeah. Did you?
Mm-hmm.
Full?
What's that?
They were full?
They were dropping. I noticed them on the ground.
Did you notice were they viable? Or?
They were viable, yeah. Yeah, I took some pictures because I found a tree that was actually abundant. Thought it was rare.
Yeah. Did you taste any?
I eat them. Yeah. I chew on them. I mean, there's not much to them, so it's not like you get a meal out of it.
No, they're small. You need them.
When I go for a walk in the woods, I'll throw them in my mouth.
Yeah, when I'm hunting, I eat all kinds of stuff out there. Rose hips are about my favorite.
Yeah.
Boy, that'll get your... It just gives me energy. I don't know. Just pop one of them in and go.
Well, if you're tuning in, you're listening to From the Forest. Tonight's topic is Trees That Bear Fruit with Gary Mead. Up next, we should talk about hazelnut at some point, but also shagbark hickory. Or shagbark hickory. American chestnut, man.
And the oaks.
Yeah.
knew that she was hot. She was singing, don't turn around.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Talk about a different forest-related topic. Tonight's topic is Trees That Bear Fruit with Gary Mead. The chestnut was probably the biggest loss. You know, here's a tree that it's nuts. They're really easy to process. They basically fall out, and there's not much to crack. They taste great. I had an opportunity to eat some after a forest fire one time, but you said its wood value and everything else, just an amazing
everything
tree.
Everything about a chestnut was just amazing. It was probably the most stellar tree that we had in our mountains here. And second to that, as far as dependability and whatever for food and for animals and humans, would be the oaks. But the chestnut was bar none the best we ever had. And I only know that because what I've read about it and heard old timers talk about, and you know, I saw a couple of chestnuts that, you know, virgin chestnuts that died, and at the mill and dried them for the people, and you know, I heard stories about them and whatever. And but you know, this one story was about, and the chestnuts always, they didn't get leaves real early, and they had white flowers. And you know, our mountain ranges, you know, high in the peaks, that's where the chestnuts grew, and they called it summer snow because it was well after the frost that they flowered. And you know, the mountain ranges looked like snow up in the mountains. You know, all the trees around them, like the oaks and that, have their leaves on, and it's green, and then, you know, there are these patches of white. And the old-timers used to call it summer snow. And that's when you can locate trees in the mountains during the spring and the fall.
Right now, the oaks are sticking out.
Well, they're green, and they're going to turn purple and dark.
All the maples are dropping or turning.
Yeah.
The oaks are sticking out like
sore
thumbs.
The ones that are bare are either the perished ash trees or and the maples. And the birches, some of them go early, some hang on. I'm not really sure. And actually, some maple trees.
Beech hold on to them, too.
Beech hold on, yeah. So if a bear is climbing a beech tree, getting the nuts, and breaks a limb, that limb will hold leaves.
Yeah,
they don't fall off. I mean, it just, you know, the whole rest of the tree is bare in the, you know, in the spring, and the one branch that the bear broke off is still sitting there with the leaves on it.
I wanted to talk about hazelnut.
All right,
real quick here. So this is a tree that most hazelnuts are sourced in the West Coast. However, almost all the native hazelnuts to North America are from the east of the Mississippi, so from Quebec to Louisiana. However, the reason why they come from, you know, the West Coast is because they were trying to isolate the tastier European varieties from the natives who harbor a disease that attacks the Europeans, and this is called Eastern Filbert Blight. So there's the American filbert or hazelnut. Mm-hmm. In the eastern United States, but that harbors this disease that was attacking the European hazelnut. So since 1921, organizations like the Northern Nut Growers Association have been hybridizing to solve the problem of the blight, because it is now attacking all the West Coast ones. They didn't stop it. It still spread anyway, I guess. Mm-hmm. So they're hybridizing the native and the non-native. And I guess the Geneva Experiment Station over there in near Ithaca or whatever, or Western New York, has come up with a hazelnut that's blight-resistant. What's really cool about this tree/shrub is that it can be grown as a shrub or a straight trunk tree, is that it can grow in all types of soil, it seems. I went on Arbor Day Foundation's website, and it can grow in well-drained to clay soil. Mm-hmm. Which to me is very important, because there's a lot of clay here and there. It does need protection, obviously, from the deer and the voles, who will, you know, just eat it a lot. So as a shrub, it can grow 8 to 12 feet, and as a single stem, 14 to 16 feet. So it's a small tree.
Yeah. So what about the wood?
I don't think it's really commercially done at all for wood.
Why?
Yeah. It's wind pollinated. Mm-hmm. So it needs two trees, and it doesn't rely upon bees or anything like that. And it's only available, this disease-resistant hazelnut, at a few nurseries, one of which is Grimo Nut Nursery. And supposedly, it's a high-yielding nut. So it's wholesaling for $3.50 per pound, $6 a pound retail, and maybe $5,000 an acre is what they were claiming on Cornell's Small Farms website. But something I'm going to give a try, because, you know, I never planted nut trees because they take so long. And shagbark hickory are already around, and I like shagbarks, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But this is 3 to 5 years. And to me, shoot, apple trees take longer than that.
Yep.
So, yeah, I'll give it a try.
Well, walnuts take about 10.
Right.
Yep.
And I like hazelnuts.
They're the fastest one I knew of was a walnut tree. But hazelnuts in 3 to 5 years, huh? Nice.
Why not? You know, we could use some more nuts in the Catskills Forest. I mean, there's just not that much out there.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, we have a lot of acorns.
And, yeah.
I mean, everything's... but out in the wild, you know, with the animals, you know, seems like everybody likes chicken and acorns. So
acorns is, I mean, so when Chestnut died, basically Red Oak usurped that growing space.
Right.
Wherever you see Red Oak today, there's probably Chestnut.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And they're basically very similar in what they demand. They demand fire and lots of light. So the red oak is just so important to wildlife. I mean, if you want to manage for wildlife, open up an oak tree. But we've talked about that many times. But you can leach the acorn and get those tannins out, and then it becomes edible. But mm-hmm. almost no one does that. But Native Americans used to leach out both white oak acorns and red oak.
Now, when you leach them out, do you do them in the shell or you pop them out of the shell?
You got to get them out.
You got to get them out.
Yeah.
You put them in like a permeable bag, something that gets, and throw them in a spring.
In a stream.
In a stream.
With fast-moving water.
Yeah.
Or you can do it in, a ball jar and filter it somehow over the course of whatever weeks. I haven't done it in 10-plus years. Mm-hmm. It was okay. But it's a lot to do for some, you know.
For what little you might get. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I know back in the day it was a staple that they depended on for their food supply.
If 100
years ago, everybody harvested. They were out picking bushel baskets of them.
If I had to pick one oak tree around here in the Northeast to pick from, it would be chestnut oak. Because
mm-hmm.
it's the biggest acorn there is in the white oak family.
Right.
And people say they're sweet. They're not no... Acorn is sweet, white oak or red oak. It's just that the red oaks are even more tannic. They're all tannic.
Yeah.
They all pucker your mouth and you know, it's tannic.
Yeah.
You can tan a hide with acorns. You can literally tan a hide. There's recipes that call for acorns.
Yeah.
Hmm.
So, yeah. You know what's even crazier is you can tan a hide using the galls on oak trees. Isn't that crazy? You know, from the insects.
Yeah, mm-hmm. on the leaf.
Who the hell picks galls? How long did that take? I never understood that. You read that and you're like, who are these people that pick galls all day? Well, then tan hides.
Not a whole hide.
I don't know. But
they're probably tanning like mouse hides.
Jesus.
Mouse hides.
Stuff like that.
It must be very concentrated because, I mean, hemlock is about 10 to 12% tannin. I don't know what a gall is, but in any case, you got to take out the tannins of acorns, and then it's edible.
Mm-hmm.
So, life before grains, you know, growing grains is a lot more productive to our ancestors than probably picking acorns. To be honest,
right? Acorns are unpredictable.
Yeah, unpredictable. Yep, sure. Right. So we got about 3 minutes left, Gary. So where do you want to take this nut show?
Well, I think I'm going to read Lost My Mind. This is, I wrote this back in 2008, and this is about, everybody's kind of losing their mind now, but we got to stay focused and, you know, don't get depressed.
Get over it. Chapter 1 of your new psychology book.
That's it. Lost My Mind. I recently have lost my mind, went searching for it, sometimes crying, wandering aimlessly over rough ground, got a little tore up on the way, come to a river a mile wide, made a wooden raft to get across. When I arrived at the other side, no mind in sight, still at large. Found myself next in the spring pool. The water was clear, the water was cool. I looked down the stream a bit. I thought I had got a glimpse of it, darting and running, hiding behind the trees. Couldn't give up, so I kept on going. Flashes of lightning across the sky. A few seconds later, the thunder roared. Next thing I knew, I saw many lost minds, running and hiding from everyone. Didn't really know which one was mine. Should I just pick one and try it on? The powder blue sky is on the rise as the darkened clouds rolled quickly by. The breeze refreshed my body a bit. I've lost my mind, but not my wit. Got on my bike and rolled along across the island to the ocean's edge. I looked so hard, my eyes were tearing. saw only birds and many ripples. My mind's still running away from me. I don't know why, but it wants its freedom. Being torn apart piece by piece, I need it back. It's hard to think. So I made a promise that I must keep to my mind and body at the same time. I need to pay better attention to them, not taking them for granted anymore. Because if I do not take care of them, they will get out and leave for sure. So take care of your body and mind, folks. And
if you start feeling anxious, stop it. Just stop.
Yeah.
Right, Gary?
It's easier said than done.
Quit it.
It really works. You know. I used to get upset and anxious all the time, and it didn't do anything for me, but make me feel. It's an awful feeling. It's the same with being angry. It's an awful feeling for me to get angry, so I just don't do it anymore. You can't. I can get upset, but I don't get angry anymore. It just I never works. It doesn't work.
Well,
so keep the happy thoughts. Take care of your mind and your body, and let's have a good month. And next month we'll talk about hazelnuts.
We can do that.
You know, enjoy everything out in the. And outside now, I mean, the weather's unusually warm, which is a little bit hard for me to take because, you know, I don't like 75-degree weather in October.
Well.
But we need to, you know, whatever we get, that's what we get, right?
That's right. You can't do anything about it. And next week is Arbor Masters Ken Palmer will be on, the godfather of arboriculture, and should be a good one. All right. Take care.
All right. Peace, everybody.
And the old man came home from the forest. His tears fell on the sidewalk as he stumbled in the street. A dozen faces stopped to stare, but no one stopped to speak. For his castle was a hallway, and the bottle was his friend. And the old man stumbled in from the forest. Up a dark and dingy staircase the old man made his way, his ragged coat around him as upon his cot he lay. And he wondered how it happened that he'd ended up this way, getting lost like a fool in the forest. And as he lay there sleeping, a vision did appear. Upon his mantle shining, the face of one so dear, who'd loved him in the springtime of a long-forgotten year, when the wildflowers did bloom in the forest. She touched his grizzled fingers and she called him by his name. And then he heard the joyful sound of children at their games in an old house on a hillside in some forgotten town, where the river runs down from the forest. Jet soars above the canyon streets, and the con man con, but life goes on, for the city never sleeps. And to an old forgotten soul